If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the living word, living light, and living love of the divine source. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Galactic Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So our seminar topic this evening is, what are you expecting? Are you ready for it? Okay. Let's start with an integration. And take a deep breath. And call yourself forward from the very heart of the heart of the great, great central sun systems. And allow that energy to flow down with your breath, right down to the top of your head, integrating, aligning, infusing, empowering, and emblazoning every atom of your personal vehicle of manifestation with the supreme being that you are. There is a part of you that is eternally within the heart of God. Quite literally, as you enter into the sacred heart space within your own inner kingdom, you find that that inner kingdom of light opens up through the core essence of all the hearts that ever were and deposits you within the heart of all hearts, which we call the heart of God. And creation takes place in the heart of God and never leaves that. That is why we remain as God created us in perfect wholeness, innocence, and peace. Consciousness extends like so many wavelengths of loving, touching through the quantum universe of untapped potentiality, so that that which is unmanifest as pure divine love can find in finite time space a manifestation, a play arena, if you will, where the different aspects of consciousness can be experienced by the oneness. And that within the dream of becoming and separation and barriers and differentiation, we can awaken to that part of us who has never and what has never ever left the heart of God. So we are always in that secret, sacred place of the Most High. The trouble is we're not aware of it, always. And so the challenge is to bring ourselves forward, call ourselves forward, if you will, into that awareness, so that when you are play acting in the realms of differentiation and difference and seeming polarities and opposition, different forms, that you can maintain that part of you as the objective witness that's always aware, that never ever buys totally into the drama, but always has that part that kind of rides shotgun, if you will, sits up on the top of the carriage of your life and sees what's coming and directs. So, expectation is actually the key to precipitation. Precipitation means the manifestation from the formless into form. You call it forward. That's why I always guide you in our meditations to call yourself forward. You have to call on that level and expect it to manifest. And, you know, it never fails to manifest. It's having the authority of your knowing to back the request, so it isn't wimpy. You know, you're called to be a spiritual warrior, not a spiritual wuss. So, as you move into this new field of energy that we're working now, you will find that more and more we're working with what is called the science of divine approach, which is based on invocation and evocation. Invocation is where you sound forth the resonant field through your voice, through your inner attunement, through your state of being, and that calls forward or evokes whatever it is that's in alignment with that particular call. And that's going to eventually replace all the supplication and petitioning and begging and carrying on that we do when we're very much acting out of the separated self. We're maturing spiritually and learning to take responsibility for how we move our spiritual inner awareness through the environment, and how we have authority and dominion in our voice to call forward that which is needful into time. We're the bridges from the timeless into time, and from infinite supply into seeming finite, let's say, apportions of supply. I say apportions because the supply will meet your expectation, which shows up in the size of your container, the size of your faith, let's say. But let's take that kind of nebulous word, faith, out of the picture and replace it with a statement, confident, assertive knowing. That your words cannot possibly return to you empty. They always manifest, always. And they manifest in alignment with your clear expectation. Expectation is an active exercising of your trusting. But again, let's move trusting aside and move to confidence. When you have confidence, That has some backbone to it of knowing. You can't be confident in something that you don't know. And you can't be really confident in something that you haven't directly experienced and ripened into a sense of knowing. So that's why this spiritual life in time and space is one of seeming like we're becoming what we've always been and remain eternally. So there are parts of our nature, the physical body, the astral body, which is your imaginative body, your causal body, which is your emotional body, your mental body, which has several levels. You have the ego mind, which is the one that you are dissolving as you awaken spiritually. You're dissolving the fictionary aspect of the self. You have the divine buddhi or intellect, and that weds itself in very well with what we call the soul consciousness. And so you have all of these aspects of yourself that in a sense you're training and bringing up to the frequency vibration of that part of you that's never left the heart of God. You're educating levels of consciousness that involve multiple lives, because each one of these vehicles or bodies of manifestation that you are appropriating and training is comprised of multiple, quote, lesser lives or little Davic entities that are being educated and are learning through your life process. In time, they will eventuate and individualize into conscious beings. But in the meantime, they are yielded, they are lent, let's say, the light of your soul infusion to begin to evolve and develop within their own realms of existence. So they're somewhat unconscious until you, as a soul, infuse them at the atomic level and subatomic level with your awareness. That is why conscious spiritual awareness is so important, because it's not just you or that which you think of as yourself. You are actually a field of tutorial, if you will, manifestation, as the life-giving spirit to many, many lesser lives, or lives that have not yet awakened into their own individual sense of selfhood. And this particular alignment that you have remains constant, whether you are a human being, or you evolve to be a planetary logos, or a solar logos, or whatever your destiny carries you into manifesting in the greater cosmic scheme of things. You're always educating, you're always imparting, you're always infusing, you're always expanding life potential in myriads of beings. You have an aura and an arena of influence that keeps expanding and expanding, expanding, until you begin, like Sai Baba, to live in the hearts of all beings on a very conscious level. And you wear, like he does, the entire universe as his vehicle of manifestation. That's what's called a cosmic individuality with a capital I. So that's the destiny of all evolving life units. Let's put it that way, life units. That is the ultimate destiny, which is open-ended. You know, it doesn't have a stop-off point where you can say, I'm it, I've arrived at the end, and there's no further progression. There's always more. I know in the Eastern traditions there has been a understanding, I think it's really amongst people who haven't gone beyond a certain level, that we merge into God and that's it. That God's an ocean and we rise up like wavelets upon the ocean and then we dissolve back into the ocean. That's not been my experience as a student of the traveler lineage. What I've experienced as I go beyond the levels where most, let's say, spiritual paths end up and stop, I find that, for example, the highest states of samadhi are simply the threshold to enter the real life, which indeed you share with God. And in my experience, as you go into that heart space within yourself, and you travel through your own inner universes, you eventually slip out of your own creational realms and you birth into the God realms that are with God within the heart of God. And in that state, as it says in the Course of Miracles, your own creations that you have created with God are maintained and sustained in infinite perfection, untouched by your life and passage through time and space in your seemingly limited human appearance. So within the heart of God, you enter God realms, God worlds. Yes, God worlds, the many mansions that Jesus spoke of very briefly just before he left to go back to those own mansions himself. And so we are getting positioned in time for something that has unlimited beauty, being, creative expression, adventure, and revelation. The true communication of God comes only directly from the heart, mind, innermost being of the divine source to that which correlates with that through revelation. It is not something that is arrived at through thinking, understanding, study, reading, or secondhand through another person. When the time has come that there's no longer the ego filters and barriers between your heart, mind, spirit, and the universal heart, mind, spirit of the all that is, understanding comes through direct revelation. In the instant, it is, let's say, called forward by the necessity of the moment. And always when you're speaking of our interaction with divine source, it's always one of extending the divine will, purpose, love, light, and living word to manifest creation. We are conduits. We're extensions of the divine heart, mind, and will of God into time and space. But extensions, not sparks, which are separated, but like rays of the sun, which extend the exact same qualities, but in separate rays that are never separated from the source of the light. So that's the function that we serve here, and we are now being called to be more expectant for the things of the kingdom of God. It's one way of languaging it. So, again, let me ask you, what are you expecting? I mean, really, what are you foreseeing? And I'm using that word very carefully, foreseeing for yourself, your family members, your fellow humans, your nation, and your world. And I use the word foreseeing as applying to seeing beforehand, which means envisioning. What are you envisioning for yourself, others, and planet Earth? This is how you actually are co-participants in the manifesting of this new level of consciousness. You have a very active role in this, very active, proactive. And there's nothing passive about it. There's nothing, truly, there's nothing jeopardized about it, because God's will is done and will be done and has been done and will always be done. We're the only ones probably that's catching up to that fact, because of all of nature already knows that. Maybe not at a conscious level, but on a very instinctual level, all of creation knows God and lives, moves, and has their being in conscious fellowship and participation and cooperation with that divine source. So the question, what are you expecting, is vitally important. It's vitally important for you to ask yourself, and then to take that question into contemplation and really examine and ponder it. That's the real meaning of meditation. It is to contemplate, to chew upon, like a cow or a ruminant would chew on its cud. That is what we are to do with these deep questions that are existential in nature. which means, who am I? Why am I here? What's the purpose of life? Where is this all headed? Where am I going? Where do I go when I leave the body? What's on the other side? What is real? What is the difference between illusion and reality? These are existential questions that only we can ask of ourselves, with a capital S, the divine self, and we will have a divine scripture that's revealed through revelation as we contemplate. That's how you get your answers. Those of you who have been asking me these questions lately that seem to imply that you think I have an answer for you about who you are and why you're here and what your purpose is, notice I haven't been answering those lately. And the reason is, you tell me who you are, why you're here, and what your purpose is. It's your story. It's your life. What are you expecting? What are you all about? If you don't know, who's going to know? Can someone outside of you know you as well as you who lives inside of you? So I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not doing readings for people. That's kind of like tossing you fish, as if you were incapable of fishing for yourself. I honor you by addressing you as a person who's already in that enlightening process. And I say enlightening process because there's, again, no end to enlightenment. So what are you expecting? Only the most courageous self-scrutiny will reveal that truth. That will set you free. And only those who are free can truly extend freedom to others, because all divine gifts are shared. You can't possibly come into any degree of greater enlightenment and loving and spiritual expansion that you don't share it with the entire collective, which in the Course of Miracles simply goes by the title, the Sonship, with a capital S. We are all sons and daughters of God. So the Sonship is a state of consciousness that's called the Christ, but it includes the soul of every one of us. Every one of us is the Christ. We're just in that process of awakening and getting out of the closet of our sense of self-limitation and self-constriction. So the first thing that you need to uncover is the subconscious conditioning you've accumulated over the ages and hidden from your conscious awareness. And it's the awareness in the midst of that, when it comes up for you, that sets you free and dissolves that which in the past had been unconscious. As soon as you bring it up to consciousness and you become aware of it, you've already started the process of dissolving it and moving beyond it. So be happy when you notice you're an ego. That means you're starting to awaken from that ego mind. Be happy when you see that you are inherently quite selfish and quite fearful. That's not who you truly are, but your expression has become conditioned so that the manifestation tends to be that way. But as soon as you see your selfishness and your greed and your fear and your envy and whatever it is that comes up, we all have the same stuff, whatever comes up, be happy, because the minute you become aware of it, it starts to dissolve in the light of that awareness. You don't have to do anything more about it. The awareness itself dissolves it. The thing of it is, most people begin to feel bad, get down on their case, and begin to feel guilty. And that's what holds it in place. They've owned it, instead of just seeing it as a state of consciousness that they're becoming aware of and are outgrowing. They try to do something with it. So don't try to do anything with this stuff. Give it to love and step free through grace. So awareness is but another term to define seeing through the higher consciousness of soul. And that part of our mind that can look and see what's going on. And it can do that with neither fear nor judgment. It's a very neutral state of consciousness when you're looking through soul awareness. Very neutral, very impersonal. So the light of awareness will clear, clarify, and bring into balance any situation without the need to do anything else at all. To truly see is to heal. That's what's so wonderful. True vision, according to the Course in Miracles, is to see the at-one-ment and to extend that atoning factor, which brings the restoration of the recognition of our wholeness. So to see truly is to heal. And that's to allow that which is greater than that which is in the world to take over. And that greater part of us makes all things new, so that the inherent divine protection stands revealed. So what are you expecting? In theory, most light workers know that their thoughts, expectations, and beliefs are creating their experiential reality, at least in theory. But that's usually where, in many cases, it remains parked, in theory. In daily practice, that's a whole other level. So you'll need to stalk, S-T-A-L-K, stalk yourself, like a cougar stalking prey, to uncover your true self. That's where you always keep a part of your awareness present, watching, listening, and observing your whatever you're doing in the world. Watch yourself like you would watch an actor from the balcony. You're watching a play down below on the stage, which would be you enacting your role in your daily life, but you stay up in the balcony and watch it. The false self, or the ego mind, is very clever. If you watch it, it will come up with a justification for everything that it does, even though there's a part of us, usually, that's very aware it's running its number, but sometimes arrogance and pride will block owning that in the moment. So, you know, there's enough investment into the ego's payoff that the ego mind is allowed to run the show. And when it's doing that, you'll notice it has a clever answer for everything, even though there'll be a part of you that knows, oh man, I wish I'd just shut up, not say anything. But yet, the programming runs. But that ego self always projects a fearful scenario. It's always seeing separation. It only expects defense and fight or flight scenarios. Now, it's all it expects. So it must project the blame upon someone or something in the world in order to get it away from its own disclosure. So that part that seeks privacy is the ego, because it won't allow anyone, including you as a soul, to get too close. It doesn't want your awareness to get too close. Now, your divine nature needs no barriers to intimacy and disclosure, because it's the state of being at one with all, and at peace with all things, and in loving acceptance of all things. So it doesn't need privacy, doesn't need personal space. So that part that is insecure and has to find fault and make others wrong so it can feel superior, that's the ego running its number. Just know that that critical, fault-finding blamer that has a negative opinion about everyone and everything, that is the ego mind, the false self, that old joy and peace robber and relationship destroyer, unfortunately. All relationships that are destroyed and end up in a very ugly place. We're destroyed by the egos being made more important than the loving. Every negative, unhappy mood can be traced to the ego mind. The part that divine grace would dissolve for you now, if you just let it. So every time you stop in mid-ego rant and choose again, when you say, wow, I sure don't like the way I'm feeling, there's got to be another way. Please help me find another way, Lord. Every time you do that, and you truly desire that peace of God, and choose loving and joining with Divine Spirit, in that very instant, you are healed and set free. I think probably most of us have seen that bumper sticker that reads, expect a miracle, or promote world peace. But usually these positive statements also remain on car bumpers and seldom show up consistently in our lives. I mean, do you really expect miracles? Do we really expect miracles? You know, often people refer to miracles as if it was a last-ditch hope. Well, only a miracle can save us now. No, miracles are natural, according to Jesus in A Course in Miracles. And when they don't happen regularly and daily, something's not in alignment there. Something's wrong. What's wrong? You're looking through the ego's point of view instead of the Holy Spirit's. Yeah. And what you expect is going to show up. Always. It's done unto you as you believe or as you expect. If you expect the world to always be taking advantage of you and screwing you and doing evil to you, it will. How can it not obey you? You are the Holy Son of God, even if you don't know it consciously. And the whole universe has to obey your word, because you're the only being that's been given the gift to speak for God. So even if you're clueless, sound asleep, speaking out of the, you know, the ego, craziness of the ego, even so, your words do not go forth vain. They do not go forth in vain. They will produce like manifestation. When you create out of the ego, through speaking the ego's jargon, instead of speaking the word of God into situations, which is your word, aligned with God, when you don't do that, you create what's called karma, or the law of reciprocity. Then you have to go back in and clean up the mess you've made. Right now, what you see happening on the planet, our souls cleaning up the messes that they have made. They have to be responsible for their creation. So the situations being worked out in the world are karmic situations. I remember Sai Baba saying that the Bush family had, for example, karma with the, oh dear, that's terrible, but I forgot the leader of Iraq anyway. Oh, dear. Well, anyway, the leader of Iraq and the Bush family had karma, which is very interesting because when you look at the past lives, you find that they were interchanging back and forth in family lineages and dynasties, and they're all interrelated. Even genetically, in terms of lineage, family lineage, they're Saddam Hussein. That's the guy's name. I'm sorry. What to do. Even in that situation, you see an ancient grievance was brought up to play out, probably with all of us who were involved in some way in that scenario too, or we would not have been participants even in knowing about it. That's why none of us are victims, ever. That's why we have all played a hand in everything that's going on in the planet now. And you can't, I can't, we can't point our finger to any quote, quote, evil doer out there as if we had no hand in their evil doings. Know that we get to play all the roles. The good guys, the bad guys, the victims, the victimizers, all of it. We get to play all roles. We get to walk in everyone's moccasins so that we will know exactly what that state of consciousness feels like to be on both sides of the line. You've got to experience both of that. At least you do if you're working under the law of karma. You can transcend it through soul awareness, but that's your only choice. You either are under the law of cause and effect and rebirth and revisiting this scenario over and over and over until you finally wake up. You have that choice, or you can come under the authority of the Christ and step free through grace, where you have a divine intercessory action that bridges you from the nightmare back to the happy dream and eventually to full awakening. And that's what's described in the Course in Miracles. So those are your choices. Do it the hard way or do it the easy way. And there's no judgment on either side, because you can take as long as you want. It's just, you know, have at it and do what you will, because actually, in truth, you always do anyway. You always do your will until you awaken to the fact that there's only one will, and that is God's will, which also is your will once the ego is dissolved. So, do we really expect miracles? Now, a miracle is that slight shift from the law into grace. It's that choice that we make for the loving. Do we really expect miracles in our lives for our children, for humanity, and our world? Do we really? And that's going to be revealed if you pay attention and listen to the conversations that you have every day within your own mind and with others. That's going to reveal to you what you're really expecting. You find yourself complaining a lot about how bad things are in the world, or financially, or what's going on that's wrong with your children, or, you know, Sai Baba said, if you have a problem, you should never speak about it. Only to God. Only to God. No one else. Why? Because the more you speak about it, now it says in the Bible, wherever two or more of you are gathered in my name, I will be present. That's also a law of coming into agreement. When you come into agreement with another person, which means you pay attention to them, which means you're giving them your energy and your support. If they're talking about very negative things, you've come into fellowship with that. And just by virtue of you being a highly illumined soul, it will manifest in their lives. That's why, you know, you really, really do not serve yourself well in having someone that you pour your problems into their ears. And you dump, you know, you use them as a garbage dumper. Learn to take your grievances, your problems, your pains, your hurts, your angers, your upsets, your disappointments, your everything to the beloved within your heart. Have fellowship and communion with the beloved within you. And also, Baba says it's important not to make other people unhappy. When you dump your load of burden on another, when they already have all they can possibly carry of their own burden, and you depress their immune system with your negativity and you make them feel sad, you're increasing the sadness in the world, because again, what you share with another is shared collectively with the whole. You're also reinforcing that problem within yourself, and in your listener. And actually, we're here, and relationships are for the purpose of sharing happiness and the good news. What is the good news? That we live and move and have our being in God. And that we're made in the image and likeness of God. And God breathed life into you and made you a living, speaking spirit that could enjoy direct fellowship and direct revelation. That was given stewardship over this entire earth to take care of it as a garden of light and life. That's your position. That's the good news. And the best news is that you have never left the heart of God, except in a fall of consciousness into forgetfulness and the belief in separation from eternal good. So are you expecting good things for yourself, for others, and for the world? If you can stay present and listen to what you're saying in your conversations with others, or what you're paying the most attention to in the news, if you listen to it, or the social media, if you participate in that, you'll have a good idea of what you are actually believing and expecting for. You may be surprised, not necessarily in a good way, with what you're actually expecting. You have to listen to the stories that you're letting come out of your mouth. And then you have to look at what stories you are listening to every day and allowing to be deposited in your consciousness. Know that all sensory intake constitutes the food we are feeding our conscience. Not our conscience so much as our consciousness, but our conscience, which is actually the voice of God within you, will kind of pull your chain and let you know when you're taking in bad food for your conscience, for your consciousness. I've noticed that today it's become quite a fad to disclose the evil doers and the evil doings of the world, as if any one of us could, as Jesus would say, be sinless enough to cast the first stone of condemnation. Can we cast that stone? I don't think so, especially if we've been co-participants in all the doings that are being displayed in the world. Which one of us has the right to stand up and point the finger of blame to a brother or sister out there that is, after all, a soul learning the lesson of love, just like we all are? And maybe learning the lesson of love by learning how awful it feels to kill and hurt and torture and maim and destroy the lives of others. You know, after a while, it's aversion therapy. So looking for the evil in others runs contrary to the fact that, or even thinking that there is evil out there in the world, runs contrary to the fact that even neuroscientists today are saying that the world we see exists only within our mind. Excuse me. It's the product, the worldview we have is the product of the sum total of the interpretations that have been formed out of our past experiences. So we just see the world through our past, through our interpretation of what we think went on, which, you know, is seldom ever accurate. So if that's so, where then are these evil doers and evil doings? kind of like evil, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder. So to be honest with ourselves, we need to realize that everything we see, notice, and find fault with is merely the reflection of what we have within our own self and have yet to bring to forgiveness and love. You have to forgive yourself for forgetting that you are divine. Really, that's the only thing you ever need to forgive. I forgive myself for forgetting that I'm divine. I forgive myself for forgetting that that person I've just blamed and judged is divine. So why is it that God-realized people only see the divine in others? Because that's all that's left in them. So notice and become more aware of what you're seeing in others and noticing in the situations and encounters of your daily life. If you look carefully, you will see a connection and correlation. The best position, I think, perhaps, is for us to own and embrace it all as part of our own self, to love it all, and to bless all of it. And to find some way to come into peace with yourself. You know, love the children of your consciousness. The good, the bad, the dirty, the clean, the whatever. Take them all in your lap and heal them with your love. So as a person thinks in his innermost heart, so he is. And out of the contents of one's own heart, one's mouth will speak. You can always tell what you've deposited in your heart. It always comes out in your speech. And you know, life's pressures will extract out of you whatever you're filled with. That's why I think so many people are acting out in such mean-spirited ways. Because if you're filled with bitterness and anger and hatred, that is what's going to come out under stress and pressure. And the Divine Spirit is putting the pressure on all of us so that we can get through the last vestiges of our withholds from love. That's why this intense pressure is upon everyone. Everything that's been hidden has to come out now and into the light and has to be brought, you know, into grace. You know, if it looks like, you know, when you have that pressure on you and it looks like road rage, or it could look like complaining or looking for trouble or picking a fight or arguing and shouting, those are all manifestations of people reacting to the pressure of the Divine Spirit. And it's pressing out that poison. It's pressing it out. And just as these times put the pressure upon us and our lives, what's coming up and out in our expression is for us to embrace. It's not to feel bad about yourself or guilty or down in your case. It's to just go, oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing this up to my awareness. I give it to you, Father. I don't need it anymore. And I thank you, you know, anger, bitterness, resentment, whatever, strife. I thank you for being my teacher and showing me that there's another way, and I choose that other way. I choose loving and appreciate it for what it is, a teacher. You know, one of the ways I can always tell that I'm getting out of balance is that I'll start to feel cross and weary of it all. So when I find myself kind of sighing and feeling kind of grumpy, I'd say, uh-oh, I need more God time, getting, you know, too involved in the internet or too involved in emails. One habit that creeps up on me is a tendency to go to the computer to check emails. And I usually do that after I come out of meditation, which you'd think would be okay, but meditation usually is working out of body on other levels, and it doesn't give time for intimate one-on-one with the beloved. So sometimes I'll go on the computer in the morning to answer or just to check my emails, okay? But that means sometimes it's late afternoon, even evening, before I've had my breakfast, or even taken time just to have my morning coffee with the beloved. And again, that isn't replaced by meditation or spiritual exercises, because you're not having a relationship with the beloved in your heart if you're just, you know, going out of your body or going to sleep or whatever people do when they work out of body. So there's nothing that can replace a sweet God talk with the beloved, where we look at things together and share our hearts and quality time. It's important to share your life with the beloved that dwells in your heart. So quiet time with the divine presence is truly the best time investment that you can ever make. And nothing is a better reliever of stress and restorer of balance and harmony and good spirit than that. And, you know, formalized prayers and quoting scripture is not necessary. You don't have to quote the book that the Holy Spirit has authored back to him. The words of your mouth will let God know if you've gotten the message that was intended or not. And part of the message is that we are to give thanks to God in all things, that God is love. So we express that we are lovers of God by loving each other. And God is working all things together for good in the lives of those who love him. And you are known as a child of God by your love one for another. And we are to forgive others so that we may also be forgiven. For what we hold against another will be held against us. And it's done to you according to your belief. These are the messages that God would have us know and practice and live. Very simple things. Sai Baba puts it even more simply. Do good, be good, see good. That is the way to God. So you'll notice that your joy and peace depart the minute you find fault with another. The minute you judge or criticize, you'll experience a drooping of your spirit. It's like your inner lotus of light starts to wilt and droop. And when that happens, you know, as it will from time to time when we get out of balance in our lives, you will need to go off and have a private God talk and tell God you don't like how you feel. And you realize your critical attitude needs an attitude adjustment. And you forgive yourself for forgetting that you are an innocent child of God, that you are divine. And sometimes we do forget that. But as soon as you release this to the divine beloved, the guilt that you had feeling will simply dissipate. And you'll have that nice, clean, clear feeling again in your conscience. I think many people who haven't truly given their lives over to the Lord have never actually felt what it feels like to be entirely squeaky clean and free in their conscience. And that's something that only fellowship with God will bring to you. Another person can't give it to you secondhand. It can be a good influence on you, but you have to make time for God. So guilt is that bad feeling that follows any time you unlovingly or harshly behave towards another being. All that God created is to be treated with courtesy and respect, including animals, and even inanimate objects. For all are manifested out of the one divine consciousness and essence. So everything, according to Sai Baba, has the capacity to feel joy and pain. So be courteous regardless of the behavior of others. Hold your ego in check and follow the Christ and stay centered. Follow the light. Follow the loving. And be the loving. Be the Christ. Be the beloved. Here's a simple exercise if you would like to try it. The next time you answer your phone or go to the door or engage in any activity with another person, remind yourself that God is on the other end of the line. God is standing at the door. God is the person that you are checking your groceries through, you know, in the checker line. God is the person that just stopped to ask you for directions. God is the person waiting in line to check out. God is the person that's putting gas in their car just before you. God is the person that's taking your money as you pay at the cashier register. You know, it really is God. But it may sound strange, but if you're faced with a bill collector or an irate mother that's reading you the riot act on the other end of the phone, or an angry coworker or boss or whatever, if you just stay centered and think that that's God, that's just enacting a theatrical role. That person is just enacting a role. I mean, they really are. It's just they probably have totally no idea that they're doing that. But if you can stay present and aware, that quietness and that knowing can bring healing and help restore balance to the situation. And, you know, it takes two people to fight. If one of them stays silent and doesn't enter into the argument, there can't be an argument. And eventually that ego, if it really likes arguing, will find somebody else who will participate in that drama. But it's time to resign from the drama of conflict, just not to give it any room in your life whatsoever, and to direct yourself to those people who choose to enact roles of fellowship and loving and are choosing to awaken, because those are the ones that you can truly have fellowship and relationship with. But in the meantime, realize that what you see in the world is a reflection of yourself. And so always forgive yourself for judging your own self when you find yourself drawn to judging something in the world. Because once you have thoroughly forgiven it in yourself, it will no longer show up in the world for you. You won't notice it anymore. So you at least remember, and even though you are enacting a temporary role also, the same as that other person, if you can stay awake and aware and not get lost in the role play, you can serve as an instrument of liberation for that whole situation and everyone involved in it. I think probably you've heard me, at least for the last 6 years of these radio seminars, that you've heard me say again and again that Earth is simply the training arena for souls to develop self-mastery. And truly, that's all it is. We encounter the experiences we've elected to undergo and experience and work with the states of consciousness that we feel that we need to experience. And that's all any experience in life amounts to. It's just a state of consciousness that we want to experience and learn to stay awake and aware in. If you hold that in mind, you're going to be able to walk through life with a great deal less stress, strain, worry, and upset. No one is a victim. In this training arena, we all are required to play and experience all roles and all states of consciousness. And after a while, you just see it as a game that it is, and you play it as a good sport, but you don't lose yourself in it. You always stay aware that in highest truth, you have never left the heart of God. And you and everyone in the world remains as God created them, eternally whole, perfect, free, and completely loved and lovable. So let's go out chanting three shantis, which is the sound in Sanskrit of peace. Om. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om, peace, peace, peace. Peace be with all beings of all the worlds. Adonai.